Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us. It is the Brew University Virtual Roundtable. Once again, glad to have you guys back with us here at the Virtual Roundtable. And we're going to be talking today about time traps and the digital detox, which I think is a fun topic and always timely because our devices have become an absolute hook for us. They're constantly pinging us with information and reasons that they want our attention. And so anything we can do to get ourselves a little less connected the wrong ways and a little more productive the right ways is always useful. So that is our topic of the day. Again, if you have any questions as we go along, please feel free to put them in the chat or raise your hand here on Teams. We'll be glad to get around to everybody. And with that, let's sort of get into it. So time traps and the digital detox. The term time traps comes from a book by an author named Todd Duncan. He's a noted sales coach and author, and the book was written several years ago and has been updated a couple times since then, all about the idea that there are the things we allow us to suck us away from productivity and take us away from what matters most and instead become traps of time that take away from what we should be doing and cause us to do things that are less productive. The term digital detox is one that I came up with for this, and it's actually based on information written in a book by Nir Eyal called Hooked, which was all about creating digital products and apps. So you take these two things together, and I think they work well and pair well hand in hand to address a central premise. And the premise is this, that we are consumed by the very technology that was meant to free us, this new wave of tools and tech that is supposed to make us more efficient, more connected, and instead it really just becomes a vortex of problems that we can fall right into. If we don't take care of it ourselves, we will succumb to that quicksand of technology instead of using it as the tool it's intended. And so today's discussion is really going to be all about what we can do to avoid that very problem. So I want to start by talking about time traps. And I'll give you a little bit about what Todd Duncan had to say, and then we'll sort of dive into the details of what the time traps really are. But Duncan had a few assumptions that he thought were important when he first put this together. The first was that most people tend to only worry about time management when they don't have time. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Nods and smiles. I'll see you on the cameras. Most people tend to only worry about time management when they don't have time, at the point that we're already overwhelmed, at the point that we are already behind schedule, at the point that we're already feeling like we need more time, that becomes the time that we say to ourselves, oh, better do some time management work. That might be a little too late. Yeah, Duncan's premise is that we do this because, you know, it's not important until it's important. But the truth of the matter is good time management is an ongoing habit that has to be built up. Most people also only tend to think about that time management in those moments because they think they can make immediate gains. And again, here's where Duncan's underlying assumption is. This has to become something that you become aware of and in tune to build a long-term habit and a process for dealing with the world. Because otherwise, you're never going to have time to make the time to do the time to things you want to do. So if you're here today because you feel like, I don't have enough time, I need more time, how can I manage that time? That's good. You're in the right place. But understand that that is not an uncommon, although somewhat flawed assumption, and that you can't just focus on time management when it matters. What we're really going to talk about today are tools and strategies you can use to build long-term habits that will make you more productive time and time again. We also tend to confuse the ideas of being active with being productive, right? There's this idea that, oh, if I'm staying busy, I must be getting things done. It's not always the case. Often the result is quite the opposite. We're busy all the time, yet nothing seems to come off our to-do list. Nothing seems to get accomplished. And that is at the heart of what these time traps are. They are the things that make us feel productive when really we're just being active. The tendency to get caught up in activities that feel like work, but they're not really adding value. These are the time traps. Duncan believes that your time is a precious asset, something that you have to protect like you would any other valuable. And so his strategies are all built around ways that you can protect your time. And so that's what we'll be talking about when we talk about time traps. And then later on, we'll talk about how you can detox from your digital life a little bit in order to make that even more effective. So Duncan has seven time traps that he identifies. I am not going to do a deep dive of all seven of them. Some of them are very obvious and easy things to do, and others simply would not matter. in terms of this discussion. So we're going to go through them, but I'm going to spend the time on the ones I think need the time today, and others we address in other places or ways, or maybe you're just simple ideas to keep in mind. But if you want a complete look inside of everything Duncan had to say, I do highly recommend his book, Time Traps by Todd Duncan. We'll put it in the show notes here, and we'll put it in the channel as well, so you'll be able to find it later if you want to check it out. Seven time traps. The first one is one he calls the organization trap. The organization trap is the idea that you spend more time organizing your workload than actually accomplishing it. So the organization trap is a way to, again, fall into a time trap of being active without being productive. The next one he'll talk about is the yes trap, and how people saying yes to too much can often trap us into being busy without getting anything done. He talks about the control trap, which is when those who can't delegate are doomed to deal with everything. He talks about the failure trap, which is when people can't let go of a mistake they've made and are trapped trying to fix it forever. He talks about the party trap, which is a really interesting discussion around how success creates a paradox of time management that we'll get into. He talks about the identity trap, one of the most insidious traps of them all that I'll tell you about before we're done, and the one that leads us into our second half, the technology trap, when we get more caught up on the tools than what the tools can do for us. So we're going to go through them each and break down a little bit of some ideas and strategies about what you can do around it as I go. Again, if you have questions, feel free to put them in the chat, raise your hand, we'll get to you, and we'll talk our way through how you can identify, become aware of, and more importantly, ultimately, avoid these types of traps. So let's start back at the beginning with our organization trap. This is the idea that we spend more time organizing our workload than actually accomplishing our workload. If you've ever felt like you've spent all day just trying to move things around on the calendar, if you feel like you spend all your time trying to figure out when you'll have time to do things, this is the organization trap, and it hits us all at some point. We try to put aside that time that's going to be for our planning of the next things, and we end up just planning to do more and ending up doing less. The way to combat the organization trap, Duncan says, is to use planning, prioritization, and boundaries. Those are the three underlying keys he has for overcoming the organization trap and not being in that vicious cycle of just constantly shuffling things around your to-do list and moving them around your calendar. Starts with planning. Always have a plan. Know what matters for each day. Budget the time for what you need to accomplish. Because if you don't protect the time, you'll run out of it. One of the things that most people fail to do, and that every time management course I've ever taken teaches, is you have to schedule blocks for everything you need to accomplish. Task lists are great. I love a good task list, and I love crossing things off. But the problem with a task list is that it can belie how much really needs to be done. It looks like you've got four things to do today, but if all four of those things are going to take 2 hours apiece, that's an eight-hour day. And that's an eight-hour day with zero interruptions. When was the last time you had an eight-hour day with zero interruptions? I've never had an eight-hour day with zero interruptions. It doesn't happen. So you've got to plan for things. You've got to plan for the fact that that one item on your to-do list might be a third of your day. And you've got to plan for the fact that interruptions are going to happen. Never let yourself get booked completely. Don't schedule meetings back to back. They always run late. The next one always is waiting to get started. And there's always something at the end of a meeting that needs follow-up before the next thing can happen. So having a good plan is key. And Duncan goes through a lot of strategies, and they're strategies that you've probably heard if you've taken any time management course ever. So I'm reinforcing them here. But understand that at the core of it is you do have to have a plan. If you don't have a plan, eventually you'll need one and you'll be forced to make one on the fly, and it'll never be as good as the one that you could have planned if you'd planned for it. Does that make sense? It's all about having a plan and knowing ahead of time what you want to accomplish. It also helps you set realistic ideas for what can be done in a day. Again, four or five things getting done in a day doesn't sound like much until you realize how much time each one of those things needs, and you realize how much time you need to leave available for the in-between spaces, the interruptions, the team member requests, the customer needs, all the stuff that's going to pop up along the way. So make sure that you have a plan for every day and that you plan it right. You'll also want to plan to plan. Make a routine habit out of doing that planning. Remember, Duncan's assumption was that most people don't think about time management until it's too late, till they're all ready for a lack of time. If you build the habit of always planning to plan, you'll get into a routine where you can control your schedule and your time much better. So get into that habit of, I'm going to plan for tomorrow at the end of each day. Don't wake up and wait to find out what's going on to try and figure out what you can fit in today's time frame. The day will always begin with a firefight. There's always going to be something important, something critical, something that has to happen right at the beginning of a day. So instead, give yourself the time the night before or the afternoon before you leave, before you close out today, start thinking about tomorrow. What are the things I want to accomplish? What time do I need to protect? What do I want to make sure is on my calendar so that it gets done? If you make that habit of always planning the next day, the day ahead, and knowing what's coming up tomorrow, tonight, you're going to have that ongoing ability to manage and prioritize and protect your time. Once you have a plan, you can prioritize. Part of the problem that we all run into is that when things are flying at us, when new requests are coming in, when there's demands for our time and attention, we have to have something to compare it to know if this is the thing we're going to stop everything for or not. If you don't have a plan, how do you know if anything that interrupts your day is more important than what you had planned? You have to have a plan to know if the plan is more important or not. So a plan gives you permission to prioritize. It's the ability to say, this is what I had to do today, and any interruptions are going to have to be more important than this. But if you can't say that with confidence, then every interruption becomes the most important thing. With each new task, compare it to your existing workload. Only allow time for tasks that need to take priority. And then at the end of the day, round up all the non-urgent matters from today, make a plan for them tomorrow. Again, it's about building a habit and a routine, that ability to look at the day and say, this is what I've got. This is what I'm going to get done. Nothing's going to interrupt it. It isn't more important. And then tomorrow I'll plan for the next day again. And finally, don't spend more time planning than doing. Avoid that by making planning a regular activity, not just something you do when you're overwhelmed. Get into that routine. The last 15 minutes of each day, or the last thing I do after dinner and before I settle in for the night, is I make my plan for tomorrow. Put it into that regular daily schedule of yours, and it'll be a lot easier to manage that because it has a place. Time management is really about trying to fit things into a calendar oftentimes, and that means trying to find a place for things. Everything needs to have a place, otherwise it's clutter. And if you don't take time to find it a place, then it just continues to clutter up your inbox and clutter up your life. So get onto that habit, start building that routine every day. If you've been doing that for a long time, you're probably already reaping the benefits. If you haven't been, you're probably feeling like many people do, overwhelmed and already behind schedule. Well, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the next best time is today. So you can get started right here today by planning for tomorrow and making that habit work for you every day forward. The organization trap. Don't spend more time organizing your time than you do actually getting things done. And don't take for granted that without a plan for your time, it's just going to disappear right from underneath you. All right, next up is the yes trap. The yes trap is easy to fall into. We're all helpers by nature. We like to do for others. And so it's real easy to want to say yes, right? People come to you, they need a favor, they need a thing done. You want to say yes. Here's what Duncan says, and I think it's well worth considering. People rarely tend to offload their critical or important work. Most of the time when someone's asking you to do something for them, it's something they didn't want to do themselves. So ask yourself, if I'm saying yes to everybody else's second and third tier tasks, what is my plate now full of? Everybody else's second and third tier tasks. This is again about having priorities that can create boundaries. We want to be helpful, of course. But in order to be helpful, we have to make sure our own stuff gets done too. You're not really helpful to people if you're constantly doing their work, then falling behind on your work and burning out to the point that nothing gets done. So having boundaries can help you create a list of what's important and be able to compare to new tasks and reject the ones or redirect the ones that are of lesser importance. Now, we've all heard the saying, and it's true, shit rolls downhill. So we know that sometimes our manager's nonsense becomes our interruptions. It's going to happen, right? If the boss has something they don't want to deal with and they put it on your plate, it's now your plate. But when you have a priority list of your own, you do have a better position to challenge that politely, correctly, but challenge that and make sure that it's not ending up on your plate just because there's nowhere better to put it. I can't tell you how many times I've been able to tell a senior leader, hey, I see this request. I know what you're asking for, and I can absolutely get to it. Here's what I'm working on. Should I stop that and work on this, or can I get to that maybe tomorrow or later in the afternoon? almost inevitably, when I tell someone what I'm able to be working on or what I have planned, and they compare what they're asking of me to it, they allow me to get a little more runway and give it to them at a later time. Because rarely is what they're looking for more important than what I'm doing. But again, if my calendar's empty, if I don't have a to-do list, and if I can't articulate what I'm working on, I'm in no position to be told, oh, you're not doing anything, do this. Having a task list makes that possible. Of course, again, some things are going to spill over and land on your plate. So the alternative is also that if you have your own team of monkey managers, you might be able to dodge a few of those monkeys coming at you and land them on your own direct reports. But that's important to, again, build and invest up front. You've got to have a team that you can delegate to make room for the things that are being delegated to you. And if you've got a competent team around you, sometimes the things that you're being asked to do can go right on by and land with them. So another way to avoid the yes trap is to surround yourself with a well-built, competent team that you trust to get things done. That way, when stuff ends up on your plate that you weren't prioritizing, you can move other things other places as well. The bottom line is being a yes man might seem helpful, but it rarely defines you as essential. Remember, if you always have time to take on your boss's stuff, eventually they might start to wonder why you don't have enough stuff of your own. So while we like to say yes and while we like to be helpful, it's still important that we have our own priorities, our own workload, and can articulate them and ultimately defend them so that we're able to show what we're creating value for our teams and our leaders. So that's the yes trap. It's that unfortunate place where we get stuck doing other people's unproductive stuff because we can't tell them what we're doing that would be more important. So if you want to avoid the yes trap, have a good plan, surround yourself with competent monkey managers. All right, next up, let's talk about the control trap. This goes right alongside with monkey management, and we've talked about this many times before, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. It's really a very simple concept. Duncan says the control trap is that those who can't delegate are doomed to deal with everything. If you can't let go of tasks and move things over to other people's plates, they're all going to end up on yours. If you're the type of leader or manager who wants to control it all, expect to control it all and expect to run out of time. We talk about this in monkey management, so if you want more on this, you can check out the recent episode of the Brew University Roundtable podcast. That was episode number one, Monkey Management 2.0, or next time we offer monkey management, jump in and take the class to learn more about how you can build a team of people around you that are more capable of doing more for you. But the bottom line is, if you insist on holding onto everything, don't be surprised when you run out of time. That's how the control trap takes place. Next up is the failure trap. The failure trap is tough. The failure trap is tough because it comes from a really good place. It comes from a place of caring and consideration and wanting to do more and be accountable for things. But the failure trap is what happens when people can't let go of mistakes and end up trapped fixing them forever or trying to fix them forever. This is a trap, which is a road to hell paved with good intentions. Oftentimes, tenacious, dedicated leaders are simply refusing to give up on a good idea or an initiative. Maybe it was their idea. And because of pride, maybe because of ego, they want to hang on to this thing. They think, if I just give it more time, if I just give it more effort, I can make it work. It's a time trap. Very often, we're chasing things that are no longer a priority, and it would be better for everyone to just declare bankruptcy and move on. But we get stuck. We get stuck being weighed down by these, you know, failures of the past, often because we can't admit they've failed, and sometimes because we're trying to clean up the mess or make good or fix them or try again. It's not easy, but you have to be willing to recognize when a mistake is a mistake, learn from it, and move on rather than keep trying to fix it. Don't cling to a mistake just because you spent a lot of time making it. Just because you've invested a lot into this idea doesn't mean that ultimately it worked. Good people with good ideas fail all the time. Sometimes because of things they could have done better, sometimes for reasons beyond their control. Doesn't matter. If you're clinging onto a mistake at the past, if you're still trying to fix something beyond the point of fixable, then it's time to let it go and get out of the failure trap. Funny enough, sometimes we see this in places where our intentions really are the best. We're trying to get that client that we know isn't profitable to just get up above the line where they could be. or we're trying to get that team member that we know really can't handle the job. We're putting everything we can to try and to help them. The best of intentions can sometimes lead us into the worst of traps. So really consider, if you find yourself strapped for time, am I holding on to any mistakes? Am I still trying to drag along something that I shouldn't? And if I can cut that loose and accept that I learned from it and grew from it, instead of just keep trying to deal with it, maybe I can get out of that trap and move on to something better. It's the failure trap. The opposite end of the failure trap is the party trap. This one, I think, is fascinating. Duncan says that success can create this weird paradox. We do well, therefore we raise the bar, therefore we have to do more to be seen as doing well. And in doing so, we fill up all the time that we gain from good time management with more stuff to do. It's sort of that race to the bottom mentality of, well, I freed up 3 hours in my day, and now I get to fill those 3 hours with more work. The party trap says we get excited about what we've achieved. We've created a success. We want to celebrate it. We're having our party. And in that party, we say, I'll take another round and another round and another round. But every one of those rounds is just causing us more work in the end. So you don't want to let success become a paradox, and you don't want to squander your victory by refilling your time with more work. Duncan's recommendation is that you use this as an opportunity to balance out your life. For years, when we talk about work-life balance here, I've been telling you guys about the idea of the wheel of life, that life is a circle made up of many different facets, not just work, but also spiritual, emotional, family relationships, community service, financial success, education, all these things that you want to focus on and make time for. If we think of that as a single inflatable tire, imagine it's an inflatable tire, and if all the air puffs up in one spot, you're going to imagine a tire, and it's got these different chambers in it. And if you overfill any one chamber, it starts to bubble out the top of the tire, creates a thunk, 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 thunk effect right up until the moment it goes pop. So you want to fill the tire evenly. Well, when we make one section of the tire a little bigger, we want to put more air in it. That's our work success. But Duncan suggests that actually what you want to do is grow the whole thing and infill it and let it inflate more evenly by taking the time you've gained in more productive work and using it to balance your work life with other things. So rather than taking that 3 hours a week that you're now saving with good productivity and dumping it right back into just more work, maybe that's an opportunity to grow in other ways, giving back to your community, furthering your education, advancing your family needs, whatever it is. Consider that you want to not be a victim of your own success. You don't want more work to just create more work. Enjoy your successes, but don't let your successes only breed the need for more success. Instead, celebrate them appropriately and then balance out your needs across other areas of your life that might be in more need of. Because again, if you've been running behind in time management, if you've been scattered and trying to get things done and feeling like you're overwhelmed, there's probably a lot of areas of your life that have suffered in that frame. Once you get your work life up and running and you've got good time management and your tasks are under control, don't let that continue to only fuel more success in one area. Balance things out. This creates a virtuous cycle that overall improves your health, keeps you growing exponentially, and prevents any risk of a long-term blowout. So that's the party trap. Now, the next one is one that I am particularly interested in, but only because I am so afraid of it. Not as much personally, but certainly because I've seen this sink managers and leaders many, many times. This one's called the identity trap. And it is perhaps the most unspoken, but also the most insidious trap of all. This is when people allow themselves to become defined by their busyness. That if I'm busy, I'm productive. And if I'm productive, people are going to think I'm a good leader. If you want to be successful in time management, if you want to successfully take control of your workload, you have to reject that self-image. That the amount of busy you are equals the amount of successful or good you are at the job. And if you've ever known somebody who is busy all the time and loves to make a show of it, that's someone who is living in the identity trap. You know those leaders that they're always telling you how swamped they are? Oh my goodness, I got so much going on this week. I'm swamped. It's nonstop. There's a million 50 things, and they're kind of complaining, but they're kind of humble bragging at the same time. It's because they've defined themselves by their busyness. Maybe you know that person. Maybe you've seen that person. Maybe you are that person. If you are, you've got to reject that self-image. Some leaders, they do it, but it's because that's usually what they believe they can control. The more we feel like we can't accomplish what we want to, the more we will retreat into the things we think we have control over. And in that case, people are retreating into their tasks because they think, well, I can't get done what I want to get done, but I can do a lot of stuff. And if I'm doing a lot of stuff, that looks like busy and that looks like productive. But there's a difference between being active and being productive. And that's a question that a leader of mine used to ask all the time was, were you active today or were you productive today? It was the most sinister and at the same time, powerful gut check I ever learned. When I feel like I'm overwhelmed, stressed out, and everything's buzzing around here a mile a minute, I just stop and ask myself that question. Am I being productive or am I just being active? And if I'm just being active, if I'm just knocking down meaningless tasks, getting caught up in my organization, if I'm moving everything around the calendar and feeling like, oh yeah, I knocked it out today, I didn't. Instead, I just was being busy. I was just being active, but not productive. So you have to change the rules. If you fall in this trap, you have to strive for more and change the rules. Let go of the mindset that your achievement and your success is based on how busy you are, and instead focus in on the results so that once the results are achieved, you're no longer bound to the time. Adopt that mindset and it can change your entire perspective. And while you're at it, do your teams a favor and apply the same standard to them. I've seen far too many managers and leaders over the years who really fall below the line of being into that boss territory because they think they measure their teams by how many hours they're putting in or how much stuff's getting done as opposed to whether or not they achieve the results. Let efficiency be its own reward. Don't worry about if somebody's putting in the OT. Instead, if they're getting things done, if the customers are happy, and if the results are there, let that be enough. When we define ourselves by our hours worked, we are in a race to the bottom. There's only 24 hours in a day. Eventually, one of us is working the full 24 hours, and that's it. They're the winner, except that they've lost. So stay out of any race that's a race to the bottom, and defining yourself by time spent is a race to the bottom. Instead, set a different standard for success that lets you get out of that identity trap of constantly having to be busy just because your identity is built around being busy. All right, so we've talked about 6 of the 7 traps so far. We talked about the organization trap. We talked about the yes trap, the control trap, the failure trap, the party trap, and the identity trap. But there is one more trap that we're going to talk about, and that is the technology trap. And the technology trap is one we fall into when we spend more time on the tools than doing the work with the tools. And that's the trap that can be escaped most with a digital detox. So, the technology trap, fighting the technology traps with a digital detox. See, the technology trap can manifest in a couple of different ways. Some people spend more time collecting tools than actually using them. If you're one of those people that has multiple calendar apps, a couple of planners lying around the house, maybe 2 or 3 to-do apps that you've tried out on your phone, but you don't really use any of them regularly and none of them all the time, then this is your trap. And I know, because this is my trap. This is the one I fall into the most and the one I have to work the hardest to avoid. I love technology. I love the toys. I love to tinker with it. I love my new things and my workflows and all my little apps that I can use to get stuff done. I love checking them out. I love every piece of software that promises to revolutionize my workflow. Gets me all excited. And this is how I found out about Duncan's book in the first place, trying to work out and take control of my own problem where I was spending more time trying to set up my technology than actually using my technology. So if that feels like something you've been trapped by yourself, you're in good company. If you're constantly chasing the next big thing, the perfect app that will make your whole workflow make sense, you know this feeling, but unfortunately, it's just that, a feeling. It's not real because there's always going to be a next big thing. At the end of the day, it's not about the tools. It's about the person. It's about how you use those tools, how well you come to master those tools that makes all the difference. Because remember, tools don't really build things. people do. You might have a workshop with the full top of the line CNC machines, routers, table saws, every tool a carpenter could ever dream of. But at the end of the day, a true expert carpenter with nothing more than hand tools might be able to build a better dresser than you ever could. The best musicians don't need classic Gibson guitars to make music. Tools are great and they can make good better. But at the end of the day, they're just tools. It's the wielder who makes things happen. So don't be ashamed to use that paper planner you've been running on forever. Because if you use that paper planner right and it gets the job done and keeps you on schedule, then it's the right tool for the job. And don't be chasing and going after the trappings of the next big thing, the perfect app, the best to-do list, the ideal workflow. That's just tinkering in technology that traps you away from time actually being productive. Again, you're being active, but not productive. If you're a tool collector like me, let me give you a couple of tips that I have figured out that have worked well. The first one is you've got to set some boundaries on how long or how often you let yourself look at new tools. Stop following the blogs. Don't track the releases. Don't know when the next thing is coming out. There's always going to be a new one. Take yourself out of the perpetual upgrade cycle. Check it only a couple times a year at most and learn to master the tools that you already have before worrying about getting an upgrade to the next one. Keep in mind, there is a big cost in terms of time to changing tools. There's a learning curve. There's a transition time. You get a new device, you've got to set up all the new device inputs and re-log into all your services and get everything back where it belongs. A practiced workflow is always more efficient than a new one. So the gains have to be significant to justify that transition cost. Second, tie your tool to an acquisition or tie your tool acquisitions to particular problems or projects. This one's helped me out a lot because I was one of those guys that I like, you know, give me that new piece of software, give me that new piece of tech. I'm going to set it aside. I'll use it eventually. I like it and I know what I can use it for and I've got ideas, but I never had a plan and I never had a real reason. By switching this particular behavior and habit of mine, it made a world of difference. Now, my tool acquisitions are tied to particular projects and problems. When I need to get something done, that's when it's time to acquire the tools to do it. No more because I might need it someday. Now I only get stuff when I actually need to use it. And the best part of that is because I have a reason to use it, I start getting skilled and practiced with it right away. In the old way, I'd get something new, and of course I want to tinker and play with it, and I'll lose a whole day tinkering and playing with it, and then it'll sit on the shelf for months before I actually really need it again. So transitioning to just-in-time acquisition is a big way to fight and break this habit. So if you're, again, one of those people that you download every to-do app because you want to see which one works best, don't go there anymore. Pick one, get good at it. Keep from checking on what else is out there until you feel like the one you have isn't working anymore or your needs change. The other thing to keep in mind when dealing with technology and the time trap that it can create is that you are up against a world of hurt when it comes to having the best chances. You are fighting the slot machine in your pocket. Because the other way to get into this time trap, this technology time trap, is by getting snared with that slot machine in your pocket called a cell phone. I mentioned at the top that the digital detox came from a book called Hooked by Nir Eyal. And his book, Hooked, was not about how to avoid this stuff. Quite the opposite. Nir was a research psychologist who, along with a few others, wrote the book Hooked as a treatise on exactly how to build apps, services, and devices that would, in fact, hook people. And his premise is that the cell phone is a modern slot machine in your pocket. It's based on one of the most addictive principles of human psychology, intermittent variable rewards. Intermittent variable rewards trigger the most aggressive, munchy parts of your brain that you can't get enough. It is the most addictive part of our personalities comes from intermittent variable rewards, and your phone is built perfectly to deliver them. So let's break it down and talk about what that's really saying. Rewards, in this case, are the notifications coming from a device or service. Every time you get a notification, that's a reward. And those rewards are variable in their size and effect. Sometimes you're getting a big reward, like a text from a loved one or yes to your last customer proposal. Sometimes those rewards aren't so hot, might even be bad, might be a new task that you have to do or change of plans that you don't want to have to make. But in reality, that variance is key. As long as there is a chance that the reward you're getting is something you want, you're going to be compelled to look at all of them. You're going to be compelled to pick up that phone every time it goes off because there's always a chance, no matter how small, that it might be what you're looking for. Just like that slot machine isn't probably going to come up with the jackpot very often, you'll keep pulling the arm over and over again to see which time it will. Variance is a key. So as long as the rewards could be big, as long as there's a chance for them to be what you want, you're going to be attracted to it. The next part is the intermittent. You never know when the next email is going to pop up, when the next Facebook message will arrive. So at any time, it might be time to win. And this compels us to check our devices more frequently and to respond to notifications like Pavlov's dog. When the bell goes off, ding, time to go get it. We want some because we know there might be a big reward there if we do. And we don't know when the next one's coming. We don't know when the next hit's going to take place. So we better jump on this one because it might be a long time before it happens again. Just like the slot machine that could always pay off big on the next pull, we pull our phone from our pocket over and over, rolling the tumblers every time we light up the screen, trying to hope for those three cherries. And we won't be dismayed by two bells and an orange. No, no. That's just time for the next pull, time for another roll of the dice. Your cell phone was designed by research psychologists to be the most addictive type of device it could be. It is meant to suck you in. It is meant to draw your attention. It is meant to trigger the most addictive parts of your brain that just eat into your soul and make you want to look at it every time it goes off. You are up against it. So how are you going to fight back? That's where the digital detox comes in. And harsh as that sounds to say it's a detox, the truth is that's what we're doing. Because whether you want to admit it or not, you are addicted to your device. It's not your fault. Nir's book wasn't a warning. It was an instruction manual. He and psychologists like him masterminded this approach. You were hooked. You were addicted to your device very intentionally by some very smart people who understood addiction and human behavior at the deepest levels. So it's not your fault. You're an addict. But like any addict, you're going to have to detox. And that's what the digital detox is all about. Getting control over a problem we all have by understanding first and foremost what it is. So how are we going to do it? How are we going to digital detox? Well, first, we've got to take control of our notifications. We have to attack the intermittent part of the problem. Have you ever gone into your notifications and looked at what you've allowed to interrupt your day? Sure, there are some things, you know, you want that to come off. You want a weather warning when it matters. But really, why does Amazon need to notify you anytime it wants? And what the heck could be important in Goat Simulator that it needs an icon badge and a lock screen notification and a sound? It's time to make some tough choices and consider what you really need. Can you turn off the sound and maybe just see that notification the next time you check your phone? Maybe an icon badge is good enough to let you know the next time you're in there what's up. And maybe you really shouldn't know that your clan is ready for battle again. A few minutes invested in your settings notifications or in your notification settings can save you tons of interruptions throughout the day. You've got to turn off the crap and only allow necessary things to get by and be ruthless. It's really difficult because we think we want to know about everything, that fear of missing out that all the kids have these days, the FOMO, it's real, but you can only break it by turning off the notifications in the first place. So really get through there, take a look, and give yourself 5 minutes to just shut down every notification. When you scroll through and go, why does Chili's need four different ways to notify me? You'll realize that every app is trying to get you this way. Turn them off, cut them off at the source, get your attention back by getting rid of the intermittent part of the problem. See, attention is a precious thing, and there's a cost to changing it. A study by the American Psychological Association found that you cost yourself as much as 40% of your productive time every time you mentally have to switch tasks. For the average person, they lose 16 hours a week in productivity just to switching tasks between what they're doing. Your phone, it's a vortex of attention. Sucks it right away. Consider a very common scenario. You're at your desk, you're writing an email, getting ready to send that off, when all of a sudden a text notification pops up on your phone. Oh, hang on, let me grab it. All right. Text notification pops off on the phone. So you stop writing, you pick up the phone, and you see a message reminding you that you're going to want to pick up dinner that night. Notice from spouse, get dinner on way home. So, of course, now you're thinking about dinner, not your email. But you know what? Good news, because right under that text notification, there's also a notification from Postmates that says if I pre-schedule my dinner for arrival later tonight, I can save on the delivery fee. Now I'm on it. Problem solved. So I'm going to pop into Postmates real quick, and I'm going to get around in there until I decide what's for dinner. And since I'm choosing, it's going to be sushi night. So we'll put that in, and I'll schedule it to arrive at 7:15. And now, boom, free delivery. Hit send. Productive master. Just saved myself a stop on the way home. Don't have to do an extra errand because I got my app and was right there. Oh, while I'm in here, let me just check, because I think Best Buy was supposed to have an order pickup for me, and sure enough, it's ready. Yes, dinner and a movie, because my new 4K streaming box is ready to go. So I'm going to go in there, make sure I've got my pickup time set for. Real quick, though, I need an HDMI cord for that, so I'm going to add an HDMI cord onto the thing, and that way I can pick them both up at the same time, get home, load up the new streaming box, boom, dinner and a movie. It's going to be fantastic. All right, swipe out of that back to the home screen, and why is there a red badge on my Teams app? That's usually only important stuff. Let me just look. I'll just look in there real quick. Give me a second. So I'm going to pop into the Teams app and see what's going on here. And oh, all right, one of my sales reps needs some samples out in the market. So that's pretty important. I want to get that done today. But you know what? He's going to be at this account, and that's not terribly far out of my way. And since I don't have to run by dinner to get home, productivity master at work, here's what I'll do. If I leave now, I can drop off the samples and check in with them at the account, and then I'll swing by Best Buy, pick up my stuff from my delivery, drop it into the car, head home, and by the time I get my new streaming box all set up to the TV, my Postmates dinner will have arrived, and I am the productivity master because I got it all done. Except for that email I was writing. See, humans aren't good at multitasking. We think we're good. Everybody wants to think, oh, I'm so good at multitasking. I do multitasking well. No, you don't. Humans are terrible at multitasking. We're not built for it. You need focus. And when you lack focus, things get dropped. Like the email that started it all that I was working on. Once I got into that phone, forget it. I'm down the rabbit hole, baby. I'm in Wonderland. There are apps and notifications and buttons to push and things to check on. It's all there. It's all there for the taking. So I've got to stop the interruption from the beginning and focus on things. Finish one thing and then do another. Don't dip in and out of devices. Put them down and out of sight. Pick them up when you want to, not when they want to be. The next level of this, if you really want to keep going and get ruthless, start scheduling your screen time. I said it. Schedule your screen time. Only check your emails a handful of times per day. Put times on your calendar where you're working on things and you're not going to answer the phone. Build stronger walls against the interruptions so that those variable rewards can't come in, causing you to want to munch on more of them later. If you really want to go all in on the digital detox, start unplugging regularly. Find times in your week to do activities that don't require your phone. It's harder than it seems. How many of us use iPhone for our music? So hard to even get a workout in now with that device not strapped to my arm. If you really want to break the dopamine addiction that has been created, you've got to get your device out of play. You have to walk away from it. Gambling addicts have to leave the casino, and you have to take your device out of the equation. Read a book, exercise, make dinners phone free. Start small. Yes, your phone is waterproof, but don't take it in the shower. Give yourself some time in the day where you're actually just focused on something that isn't able to interrupt you. Get a music-only MP3 player for your workout if it helps. Carve out time to read a book. Whatever it is, you need to plan the time where you are going to unhook, because as long as that device is around, you're going to be tempted by it. It's not your fault. You're an addict. Happens to the best of us. But this is the world we live in now. We live in a world where people sit in their living rooms while a 60-inch television plays, and yet they're all staring at the 5-inch screen in front of their face. If you look up from your screen at the other people in your living room, you'll know what I'm talking about. You may not have noticed because you were looking at your own 5-inch screen in front of your face. Look around. We're ignoring the big screens now because we're addicted to the small screens. Put the charger away from the couch so that you have to put the device down over there to charge it. Whatever you can do, the more you can unplug from those devices, the more you're going to give your brain a chance to reset. Make time for digital detoxing. It's not easy, but it's worth it. Use technology to help get away from technology. You can set up auto message replies, out of office replies, turn on do not disturb while driving so that you're not tempted to respond to a text. It won't even show up in your car. Use your out of office when you're not going to be available. Make sure that you block time on your calendar so people know that you're busy. But ultimately, give yourself a break from these devices. You're an addict. It's not your fault. But like any addict, you have to be able to admit it and start unhooking from it if you want to be able to get better. The digital detox is key. Find time, make time for yourself that gets you away from these devices and gets you back into a set mindset of focus. So, what can we say about time traps and the digital detox? Well, first, we have to remember that it's all about taking control of our time, not letting it control us. Don't fall into the traps of organizing your time more than you're doing things. Don't fall into the traps of saying yes or letting failures drag on forever. And don't let yourself be defined by your busyness. Be defined by what you achieve and what you accomplish, not by how hard you're working at it. And remember, ultimately, we are at the hands of a device that is built to hit our addiction centers. So give yourself time and permission to unplug. Find ways to get off of the devices themselves. Give yourself a digital detox and take back control. If you really want more information on either of these, again, check out the books, Time Traps by Todd Duncan or Hooked. And in fact, I will tell you that Nir eventually did come around, by the way, and realize the mistake that he made and has written a new book since on specifically how to unhook yourself from the very devices he helped create. And so we'll give him credit for eventually seeing the light and coming back over to the good side. And you can check those out. We'll put all links in the show notes for those as well, so you can check them out for yourself. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. And with that, we are done and out for the day. Have a great weekend. Talk to you later. Bye.